We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel, and regular on the show, Will Jackson. How are you doing, guys?
I woke up at 5 a.m. and it was almost worth it. Almost.
Yeah, I'm not doing too great. What about you, Nick?
I'm alive. You know, I'm getting ready to celebrate the holiday, and I'm not talking about Easter after a game like that. 112-108, game four. Nets are down 3-1 in the series. Before we get into it, check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and YouTube. But, guys, I guess let's work our way backwards. Let's just start with the Jared Allen play at the end. Did you guys think that was a foul, or do you think it was on D'Angelo not getting the ball in a good position? What happened on that last crucial play for the Nets? Obviously, there was a free throws after that, but it didn't really matter after that point.
No foul. It was, if you're going to call that, there was a lot of dinky calls both ways tonight, but that was clearly not a foul. Jared Allen didn't have the strength to sort of finish through that. Was it the right play? Yeah, it was a clean offensive play that Jared Allen couldn't finish or kick out in the right time. Ben Simmons stripped him. I personally, when I was running the Nets Republic account, I would have liked to pull in Caris LeVert's hand. Just let that dude drive, let the hot hand go. But D'Angelo Russell made the right play and the right pass. But the Sixers did a better job of collapsing on him. And the strength of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid was just too much for Jared Allen in the end. And, you know, you could probably go back a couple of plays before that where that ACO play where the Nets just gave it away. I think that was probably even more significant in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, like Jack said, it was the right pass. Just Jared Allen isn't strong enough to hold on to it in that situation. Just Ben Simmons is stronger than him pretty much. It just sucks, that play, man. It's going to stick with me for a while. There was no foul. It was a completely fair play. It sucks.
Yeah, it was just a rough play. I think it was a little bit of a tough position to put Jared Allen in at that point in the game. I know, like, driving to the rim. But in the situation, you knew they're probably going to send attention his way. So I would have rather had the ball in the guard's hands, maybe hold on a little bit longer or force yourself to make a play. Or if you're passing to Jared Allen, he's right at the rim to make a dunk or something like that. I just don't think he's comfortable at this point in his career to have the ball in his hands in that situation.
No, I don't think he is either. He did have a really good game tonight. I think a lot of credit needs to go there. Probably his best, if not tied with his best game of the series. You'd rather D'Angelo creating, Caris creating, Spencer creating in that sort of situation, get that sort of ISO play going, because for the most part of the night, it did work. Caris LeVert was the hot hand. I got his sentiments. I wanted the ball in your boy's hands, Nick. But at the end of the day, it wasn't meant to be. And the most entertaining series, probably one of the most memorable games of the playoffs so far, had to end with a Mike Scott win. And we all know how good Mike Scott is at basketball, for those that have watched The Office.
Well, talking about the last couple of plays, you brought up the turnover after the timeout, and then also the Mike Scott three and the J.J. Redick three. They're probably three of the most crucial plays in the entire game. What are your thoughts on those?
The Mics got three. I thought the Nets played really good defense. And in the end, in a scrambled sort of play, that you get a Mike Scott up three, and it just, you know, Joe Harris almost gets the deflection off Joel Embiid off the passing and stuff, and it ends with the Mike Scott three. It just happens. Those scrambled plays that end in weird endings, they happen. JJ Redick threes, you essentially don't necessarily want the ball in his hands consistently. They're just able to close it out. You know, 17 points in a quarter, in probably their most important quarter of the season, isn't going to cut it. And, you know, a little more level-headed than I thought I would be, but I think it's partly because we weren't supposed to be here, but at the same time, we were so close, and it hurts a little bit. But you know, it's Easter. Let's eat some chocolate. Let's drink some whiskey. Let's Nets fans, we'll be okay. We might sneak one or two away from home, and you know, we've still got Jared Dudley.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Scott is basically on Philadelphia to hit the three and space the floor. And, I mean, that's basically what he did at the final play. I mean, he's there to hit that shot. And, I mean, obviously he's not the guy that Philadelphia would want to have the ball in their hand. But, I mean, he just got somewhat open. And, I mean, he's there to hit the three and he did it. And, I mean, we played good defense, like Jack said, on that possession. It's just they have so many guys on that team who can score. It's just we can't cover all five at once at a high level. And that's just what happened.
Yeah, and I think that's where attention to detail really, you know, hurt them. Maybe not as much on the Mike Scott play, but on the J.J. Redick three, it came off of Ben Simmons' miss at the rim, and it just felt like everybody was kind of ball-watching in that situation where, you know, maybe get a little bit more in the moment. You could tell, you know, not as much in this game, but throughout the series, the Nets are a little bit inexperienced when it comes to the playoffs. So overall, like Jack mentioned, it's still house money, and, you know, it's still great experience for them, and maybe they can kind of pull one off on the road. Now, is there any other plays you guys want to talk about, or you want to get into the player breakdowns?
I thought that there was a lot of plays throughout the night, but it was just that fourth quarter, Nick. You know, you can't I'm going to harp on it. 17 points isn't enough to get you a win at home in a playoff atmosphere. 33 points in the first, 30 in the second. We played great basketball for three quarters, but we couldn't close it out. And there were just too many missed opportunities. You know, Joe Harris was terrible and has been terrible this entire series. It pains me to say that, but, you know, he hit that one runner, that one drive, which was really nice, but there was just not enough outside of guys, you know, basically outside of Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, and to a lesser extent, Jared Allen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of plays that you can go into in this game. And just this whole series, Brooklyn has been playing really well in the first half, and they just can't close it out. And we've seen it, and it just really hurt us tonight. So there's, like, a lot of plays that we can look at in the second half, but none that I should specifically get into right now.
Yeah, I thought, you know, they had plenty of opportunities in the fourth quarter, you know, missed threes, missed free throws, whatever it may be. Thought there was an opportunity to definitely win this game, and they didn't capitalize, like I mentioned, the small details. But kind of getting to the players, I guess let's start with Caris LeVert, who got the start tonight, which we kind of advocated for after game two to start, and Kenny finally did it in game four, and it really paid off. Played 42 minutes, 25 points, 9 of 18, 3 of 8 from 3, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 turnovers, and 1 steal. That's a great stat line for Caris.
It is, and I will nitpick, only 4 of 9 from the free throw line. That's one area where he can get better at, and I think it's a mentality thing. He's better than that, but I'm nitpicking, and, you know, we had those 5 extra points, we get the win. Again, it's nitpicking from Caris LeVert, which is this is the Caris LeVert we saw pre-injury. This is the Caris LeVert that was the leader of this team. And it almost seems like since he's got back in this playoff series, and probably the fact that he's a nice matchup against Philly, that he's become the Nets' best player again. And he's playing like it on both ends of the floor. He's driving like an absolute madman. His pick-and-roll play with Jared Allen has been amazing. The three ball is falling and looks smooth. And he is driving and strong. And his footwork is insane. He's just so slick, so smooth. And it's a pleasure to see. And you guys sort of harped on the last buzz to see some extra minutes for our best guys. 42 minutes of Caris LeVert. I think that was completely and utterly justified.
Yeah, and then you mentioned how good he's been on offense, but also he's been doing it for the Nets defensively as well. He had a steal on this one, a big steal that almost got us back into it, but we couldn't capitalize off of it. And, I mean, yeah, just like where would the Nets be right now without Caris LeVert? I mean, we'd probably be swept. He's just been so good this series, and he's like really showing out. And the Nets need that, not only in this series, but going on into next season as well.
Yeah, I think his two-way ability really sticks out because he's a guy that obviously offensively, Jack talked about it, Will, you talked about all the things he's done, but defensively, his ability not only on ball but off ball, he drew a couple fouls on J.J. Redick with the push-off. I just think the activity he brings and the energy is something that the Nets really needed, especially in this series and then in this game, and it almost got them the W.
It really did. Guys, in the post-game, Joel Embiid's comments, just to go off tack a little bit, this was on Jared Daly. First of all, he's a nobody. When opponents do stuff like that, they're trying to get us out of our game. I'm too valuable for that. Thoughts?
Well, Jared Dudley is probably my favorite player right now. just because of the way that he goes at them. I mean, it's not like, you know, he might be doing this to troll them. He might not. I just feel like he's really being that veteran. And like, Embiid had a hard foul on Jared Allen. Whether you want to call it a common foul or a flagrant foul, that's up to you. The refs called it a flagrant. But, I mean, it was a hard foul either way you look at it. And Jared Dudley was just standing up for him. And, I mean, that's what you really want out of your veterans. So, I mean, to say he's a nobody, he was a plus 12 today. And, I mean, I think he's been a positive all series. And he's just pretty much been one of the most important pieces for the Nets. And we saw when he missed game two how, like, vital he is. So, to say he's a nobody, man, I just don't get that.
Well, I think if you call him a nobody and you say he's just trying to do that, well, then you're kind of almost insinuating your teammates don't know what's going on, because Jimmy Butler obviously didn't think he was a nobody, went over there and shoved him. And then same thing with Ben Simmons. He's given the light of day to argue with him back and forth. So, hey, you know, Jared Dudley, he's not a great NBA player. He's a veteran. He knows how to play the game. He knows what he's doing out there. And he did his job tonight. And Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler both bit.
And if Jared Dudley's a nobody, what does that make Ben Simmons? Because in the first half, Jared Dudley was outplaying him. And Ben Simmons, it took another Jared Dudley sort of beef to get him motivated. And again, he wasn't great. You know, 50, despite the fact the stat line always looks nice with Ben Simmons, he's better without Joel Embiid. And I'm putting that out there. These two, and you know, this is a flat-out disrespect to the Sixers fans, but I don't care. They're not going to win a championship with those two playing together. And it's simple as that. Unless they get 8 other shooters in their team or 13 other good shooters, it's just not going to work. And Ben Simmons, cool, whatever, do your thing, mate. You're Aussie. I respect you to an extent, but keep dating Kendall Jenner, because that's probably the best thing that's going to happen to you for the next couple of years.
Oh, man, Jack, I'm angry right now.
I'm inspired by Corey after yesterday's outlet.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just look at it a couple different ways. And honestly, you know, a lot of people are like, advantage the Nets. Like, the Nets really missed Jared Dudley in that second half. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's substantially better player, but the Sixers only so many players can shoot. So I felt like actually losing Dudley really hurt them, because it forced them to a couple lineups where they had to play Trevion Graham a little bit more, Rondé a little bit more, and even Damari Carroll. And I felt like Dudley was probably better than all those guys.
He was. He really was. And despite the fact that they lost Jimmy Butler, and, you know, apples and oranges, you know, I would much rather have Jimmy Butler out for them and us to lose Jared Dudley at the same time. But that first half, the first three quarters was just absolutely wild. And you could just feel the atmosphere. And I'm thousands and thousands of miles away, but to be at Barclays, I could just feel the atmosphere. You know, following OTG with Will running the account as well, there was just this vibe that's happening in Brooklyn right now. It seems that it's becoming our town. And if the Knicks can't make playoff basketball their own, then the Nets are going to make a real imprint. But it was... Should we go through that whole kerfuffle as well? Because I think that was probably the major talking point of the game.
Yeah, we'll get back to the players after that. Obviously, you know, Will kind of brought it up. Embiid came with the hard foul. Like you said, you want to call it a comment, you want to call it a flagrant. If he didn't laugh and have the other hard foul earlier in the series, the other flagrant, he probably doesn't get called for a flagrant. But the fact is, and then all that stuff happened afterwards with Jared Dudley approached Embiid. Then Jimmy Butler comes out of nowhere, shoves him. And then Dudley ends up in the first row and he kind of pulls Ben Simmons down. The rest of the Nets weren't really into it. It's pretty much Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Jared Dudley.
Yeah. It essentially was, and D'Lo was sort of getting in there. I thought that if it didn't spill into the crowds, it would have been just a couple of blatant, just normal texts. Yep. But the fact that it spilled into the crowd, I think that the refs had to sort of make a point of it, despite the fact that it shouldn't have been. I was seeing some wild takes on both sides about the Joel Embiid foul in the first place. Joel Embiid talks a lot of shit for a guy who is... soft. Like, Joel Embiid is soft as shit. I'm not, like, the Eric Bledsoe play, like, he's getting, like, rooked by, like, 5'8" guys on regular occasions, and he acts like he's, I don't know, like, he's Matt Barnes or Ron Artest, and he's just soft, man. And, like, he plays hard, but when it gets into, like, this little dinky shit and it goes on the other end, he just becomes, he becomes super soft. He talks a way bigger game. Him and Ben Simmons talk a way bigger game. But at the end of the day, they got the win, so they're the last ones laughing.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention he was stuffed by Rondé on 2 straight shot attempts. Exactly. I mean, he's not I mean, he's a great player, not taking anything away from him. He had 31 points tonight, 12-22, and he had 6 blocks. I mean, yes, he's a little soft, but he's also – he can back it up. So I don't think that – I mean, yeah, he's just – he's a, he can back it up, and that's why not a lot of people have an issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to win and they're going to go out there and he's going to perform, I think more people have kind of taken shots at him for the fact is he's not playing games because of knee tendonitis and, like, he could possibly play through it. So that's argument for another day. Getting back more to the net side, did you guys think that that scuffle gave the Nets more energy or it helped the Sixers, or how'd you view that?
I thought it was sort of a net neutral in the end, Nick. I thought both teams, you know, we saw a couple of big plays from Ben Simmons following that, Joel Embiid as well. But the Nets were able to respond at the same time. So there was an energy around the arena, so to speak. It was nice to see Jared Dudley high-fiving Sean Marks on the way out. hashtag my GM. At the end of the day, it was it would probably get a lot of the headlines. Jared Dudley was trending, which is wonderful. And, I mean, we need 8 games in this series because it's so bloody awesome. This is what basketball is all about. We live for this sort of shit. But I thought that it was probably it evened out by the end of it. And at the end of the day, I don't think it really had that much of an effect on the game. But, you know, if you look back, you know, if both players in Dudley and Butler stay in, how does that affect this? It's a major what if, but I think the Nets probably could have been just as good. But, you know, the Sixers would have had Jimmy Butler at the same time.
Yeah, I think that it kind of helped Brooklyn a little bit just because it really got the arena going. And, like, because we saw, like, after that scuffle, the bench was really excited, especially, like, the young guys, like Theo Pinson and Rodion Skuruks. They just got really excited over it, and we can see that, like, the emotion was building, like, up to that, and after that, it kept building. And, I mean, that just – I mean, it helps both teams in a way, but especially when you're home, that really, like, builds to you.
Yeah, I felt like the crowd kind of got into it, obviously, with the boos. They were a little bit more energized. And obviously, Barclays, I thought, was really lit tonight. Obviously, we weren't there, but we could hear on the TV. So overall, I thought the energy kind of pumped back into it a little bit. But like Jack said, I don't think any of the players individually, like, got some extra juice. Maybe Joel Embiid after it. I thought he had a couple really good plays, but that kind of died down after that. Now, getting back to the players a little bit, I thought Spencer Dinwiddie had a really good game. He probably could have been a little bit more aggressive later in the game. 18 points, 7 to 12. Another game where he was kind of just driving and getting to the rim.
I thought that Spencer Dinwiddie was awesome, and I would have liked to see him out there a lot more than Joe Harris. The fact that he played 27 minutes compared to Joe Harris's 35, to me, was criminal.
Yeah.
I think a lot of fans are going to hear me say this and be like, what the hell's going on? Jack's talking ish about his boy, Joe Harris. At the end of the day, I'm more of a Net fan than I am a Joe Harris fan. And Spencer Dinwiddie was absolutely awesome. Despite the fact that he was minus 16, he was driving like a madman. And whenever he was out there with another guard, they were cooking. They were absolutely cooking, especially in the second unit. And guys like Boban and Mike Scott and James Ennis, all these sort of dudes had nothing on Spencer and Harris. And he needed to play 30 minutes plus. And I think that had Coach Kenny had his time back again, that probably is one thing that he could have changed. And I mean, we could talk about the wing sort of rotation, but I think that that's one area he could have changed and controlled himself, because I think whenever Spencer was out there, we looked better on offense.
Yeah, and he kind of carried us towards the end of the third quarter where we had like 10 points in the quarter. And when Philadelphia would make a shot, he would come back and make one. He had like a really strange circus shot that he made that I don't quite
that was
still.
Yeah.
I still don't understand how it really went in.
I don't either.
But
I went in. That's all that matters.
Yeah, no. I mean, he carried us towards the end of the third quarter. I think why he didn't get as aggressive towards the end of the game is because he had those 5 fouls with 6 minutes remaining. But I mean, we don't stay close without him or Harris playing the way they played.
And talking about Spencer, I felt like he honestly could have probably got more minutes than D'Angelo. Not saying D'Angelo was terrible, but I just felt like Dinwiddie was a little bit better, especially defensively, and then the aggression in terms of driving to the rim, where D'Angelo's driving game is a little bit on the soft side.
Yeah, I thought that D'Angelo, it seems to me he hasn't had the best series so far. And I think that at the same time, you know, he's hit a couple of decent threes. I've liked his activity at times. He might not be getting a few calls, so I respect that. I have liked his defense, especially in this game. I think that a lot of credit goes there. He seems to be really trying and really engaged on that end of the floor. And despite the shots not just falling as much, you know, he makes his bread and butter on the jumper. But I think that, you know, he's the third best guard that we have right now in this series. That's not to say he's the third most talented guard. He's obviously, you know, D'Angelo Russell at the end of the day. He's an all-star. But in this series, he just isn't the best matchup against this Philadelphia 76ers team.
Yeah, and he made those clutch three like he pump fake Simmons and made it. I mean, that's just kind of the thing that he can do late in the game, and he wasn't good starting out the game. I mean, in none of the games this series, he had a hot start. But, I mean, he kind of got it going towards the end of the game, and I kind of had the feeling that he was going to take the last shot. I kind of had a feeling like he was building to take a three towards in that last 18 seconds. I mean, obviously, he passed it to Jared Allen. That was a good play, but I kind of felt like he was leaning towards taking a three there, especially after he got a screen. But, no, I mean, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been the D'Angelo Russell that we needed, and he's going to need to step up if the Nets are going to win another game this series.
Yeah, I'll go ahead, sorry, Jack.
Post-game response from Jared Dudley via Razan Gould. If anything, I would have got my money's worth even more. If anything, I should have got him worse. Jared Dudley wants all the smoke, guys.
I mean, and that's his job on the Nets. He knows he's the veteran. He's going out there and trying to cause a commotion and, you know, kind of set the tone for his team. And he knows Jared Allen's not going to get up and shove Joel Embiid. So he did it for him.
I was big on that. I was really happy that someone sort of stepped in a little bit. And the fact that after that, you know, Joel Embiid points at him, calls him soft. It's just like, dude, you hacked him. And like a lot of players were saying it was all ball, but he got hit. It was a foul. And at the end of the day, you know, Jared Allen sold that one a little bit better than he sold the one when he got an elbow in the freaking face. You know, I'm just really hating on the Sixers and deservedly so.
Yeah, no, very, very deservedly so.
I mean, and I think more, you know, as a whole, there's a lot of Nets Twitter right now that is hating on Jared Allen. And I think that, you know, there's plenty of people sort of saying, we need a new setup. We need a new setup. He's not big enough. He's not strong enough. He's like 20 years old. And yes, like he's not. I think that we are way too rash as fans. And I think that that's, I mean, the nature of the definition of fan is fanatic. And we get irrational in that sort of sense. But Jared Allen's going to be just fine. I mean, not many people can guard Joel Embiid in this league, let alone Jared Allen, who still had a net impact in this game. You know, he wasn't as bad as he was in game one. He has learned things and is playing better. Joel Embiid does this against everyone. And yes, he's got a bung knee as well. But he is a tremendously talented, gifted, strong player. I think that we are getting way too rash and way too caught into hyperbole way too often. But that's Twitter for you.
Yeah, going back to Jared Dudley for a second, there was something like where he went on Twitter right when he went into the locker room where he liked a tweet that was like sent like five minutes after. And I mean, just like he wants like the attention, he wants the smoke, if you want to call it that. And I mean, I love it. I mean, it hypes us up as fan base, just like him wanting to go after their best player. Someone who's not like very well liked across the league, at least, and I mean that's just something that he provides. Yeah, about Jared Allen, I mean he's only 20 years old. He's going to put on muscle as he gets older. I mean you have to remember that he's still developing. He's not like a finished product right now. You know we're not supposed to be in the playoffs. I mean Sean Marks said it, Kenny Atkinson said it. We're not supposed to be here yet. So to expect Jared Allen to play like I don't know DeAndre Jordan or DeMarcus Cousins or Nikola Jokic, it's just not going to happen. So I mean. Yeah, you can't just get too mad at him for not being the strongest player on the court.
Fans are going to react to a playoff loss like that. And Jared Allen, you know, being 20 years old, going against Joel Embiid, I felt like the last two games he's been good. And offensively, he was able to have an impact on the game. I'm not really upset. I think people are just freaking out. And they just want the Nets to be better now instead of having some type of patience.
Yeah, Nick, there's some other post-game stuff just on Twitter right now. Brett Brown on Brooklyn Chedge in their starting lineup. I respect him for trying stuff. But how it impacted us was marginal.
Okay.
Like, what is with this Sixers squad thinking that they just have this, like, hubris over Brooklyn? Like, you haven't done anything yet. You've, like, guys flamed out in last year's playoffs. You are struggling to knock out a team who is three spots under you and is struggling when you have 4 to 5 All-Stars in your starting lineup. Like, this team, man. Like, the Sixers were one of my favorite teams going into the season, but in the space of 4 games, they've become my least favorite. And, like, I like the Golden State Warriors more than this dumb squad.
Yeah, because at least the Warriors have actually done something. And, like, Brett Brown saying it didn't have any impact. Like, Caris LeVert playing more minutes didn't have an impact in this game. He scored 25 points, and he was cooking everybody on your team. And Jared Dudley had a good first half where he was ejected. So that's just, like, dumb things coming out of Brett Brown's mouth. And I felt like, honestly, his coaching wasn't that great. His team pretty much bailed him out because there was just a lot of plays late in this game where Joel Embiid was too dominant, or it was like a play that got broken down or an offensive rebound and they ended up with an open three.
Yeah, I mean, Brett Brown is really coaching for his life right now because he's – I mean, we've seen it. He's not willing to make a lot of adjustments. And, I mean, that's going to cost them later on, especially against a team like Boston or Toronto. Because, I mean, they're just not going to get away with it because they have, like, bigger better players than we have right now. So to say that it had no effect is just.
So moving on from there, though, getting back to some of the players, we talked Karras, we talked Spencer, we talked a little bit Jared Allen. I think now getting to some, and a little D'Angelo Russell, getting to some of the guys who I think underperformed in this game and the last game would probably be Joe Harris and Damari Carroll. Both guys, I think they need more production out of these two, especially from the three-point line, a combined 0 of 10.
Yeah, their impact on this series has been incredibly minimal, and they've been two of our most, they have been our two most important role players for the entire regular season, and it's sad to sort of see this major drop-off. And it's not to say that the Sixers have been doing anything tremendous against them. They're not, like, guarding them like madmen. Yes, Joe Harris, he's just gone cold. And I think that happens. You know, we need, you know, for the Nets to beat this Sixers team who is way more talented, way more gifted in so many different ways, we need that team sort of performance, that sort of team ethos, team buy-in that we've had all season. The fact that we've been able to be in this game with so many role players not doing their bit, and obviously Ed Davis out injured and Jared Dudley getting ejected, you know, says a lot about the talents of a guy like Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie, and to a lesser extent, Jared Allen, because you're essentially relying on three guys who, like fourth, fifth-year players against guys like Joel Embiid, who is one of the best centers in the league, Ben Simmons, Rookie of the Year, Tobias Harris, the guy who's going to earn himself a max contract, and J.J. Redick, who's one of the best three-point shooters of the past decade. We need our role players to step up, and it's probably a big reason why we're 3-1 down.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Harris can't go over 6 from 3. I mean, he had some wide open shots in that game, and he just wasn't hitting. And I tweeted this out. I was running the OTG Twitter account today, that the Nets, this is one of those games where they miss Allen Crabbe. I mean, we talk bad about him sometimes, about how he's really hot and cold, how he can get really off sometimes. But on a day like this where Joe Harris goes 0 of 6 from 3, it's just like a day where you need that other three-point specialist on the team. And, you know, he's on this team and he just isn't playing. And that's like, this is one of those games where they really missed him.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Crabbe thing, it's kind of just like a hypothetical, though, because much as we know, Crabbe's having an ice-cold series. He could have a super hot series or an ice-cold series. He's kind of just unpredictable. I think with Joe, you know, some of the three-point shooting has been rough, obviously. I do like the fact he still stayed active in terms of cutting, and I thought his defense was a little bit better this game. I was really upset with Damari. I just felt like this game, like in this series, he hasn't been that veteran they really need him to be. And there was a couple drives in this game where he had J.J. Redick on him, and he either couldn't finish or J.J. Redick got a steal on him. Like, that just can't happen.
They can't. And I think that there's a lot of plays that Damari can do a lot better, and he should be impacting the game in a much more positive way. But we've seen it from him all season. He was in our other guy's series, I believe.
Yep. Yeah,
for OTG Basketball. So he really should be playing a lot better than he has been. You know, as a role player, he's better than, you know, these James Ennis, Mike Scott sort of types. In my eyes, I think he's more impactful. But he just hasn't been playing well enough, and you can't rely on just three guys to get a win, especially when you're, you know, the underdog team in this sort of series. But guys, going back to Kenny Atkinson, I had a little bit to say on that Jared Allen play. Said he was disappointed that rapping was an officiating point of emphasis, but it wasn't called tonight. So he thought it was a foul.
I know this is what he's talking about, because I actually was scrolling through Twitter when I was watching it, and I want to say it's Tobias Harris clearly grabs Jared Allen as he's rolling to the rim, and that's why he loses his balance. He doesn't lose his balance just because he's like tall and goofy. Like, Tobias Harris like hooks him, which we've seen this call 100 times throughout the season. It might be the most calls that Jared Allen actually gets is because he rolls to the rim so fast. That's what Kenny's pissed about.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's frustrating. There's a lot of calls that could have gone our way and could have gone the other way. It's upsetting that it probably has cost us our season in many ways. But, you know, you can look back on a lot of moments throughout the game, as we've talked about. It's disappointing, but it's not the first time that officiating hasn't gone our way as Nets fans.
Yeah, I mean, you can't rely on a foul call to win the game or tie the game. I mean, bottom line, you know, maybe it was a foul. I have to look it over again, but you can't rely on that.
Yeah, and I don't think he's relying on it, though, but it's like the fact is that he just, like, fell over, and that was the main reason. It's not like he threw him the ball right after that, and he never had his balance, so I understand where Kenny's coming from. Obviously, the game's not decided by one play, but I can see why he's upset about that play.
Yeah, and I think Coach Kenny deserves a lot of credit for backing up his guys. I think that's something he does way better in fashion than Brett Brown does. Brett Brown is almost, like, sort of an ancillary role to his star players in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. He's made some adjustments throughout this series that deserve credit, but not enough. I think that in terms of a coach, I would much rather have Kenny Atkinson leading my team for the next decade or so than a guy, Brett Brown, who is, you know, he gets, I mean, Coach Kenny gets it from our own fans quite consistently, but I'd prefer the stability and the passion that a guy like Coach, what Coach Kenny possesses.
Yeah, and Brett Brown's a little bit older, and he's more experienced. And like, it's like, all right, you've been coaching for X amount of years, where Kenny's still early in the process.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'd rather have Kenny as a coach as well, just because, I mean, Brett Brown doesn't make adjustments like we've said 100 times in this series. But yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Kenny Atkinson as a coach. He just got extended, so did Marks. And there's no guarantee that Brett Brown will be back next series. So, I mean, we'll see.
Go ahead, Jack.
I was just going to shout out for the OGGBasketball.com article. Who was it that wrote it? The guys Cam. Coaching for Cam wrote it for coaches and coaching for their lives in the postseason. So want to certainly check out, and Brett Brown is probably at the head of that.
Now, who else on the team did you guys want to talk about? Anybody else you think deserves some recognition, or we pretty much covered everybody except Rondé?
I think Trevion and Rondé collectively are the guys we haven't spoken about much. Both of them played 13 minutes. Both of them had over 3 from the field. You know, Rondé was minus 13 in his 13 minutes. Did score, was driving, had a couple of blocks. But he was almost we had to play him at that small ball 5 in the absence of a guy like Ed Davis. So and Trevion Graham just wasn't hitting his threes, and that was plain and simple. If he had hit one or two of those threes, it changed the trajectory of his individual game and the Nets game as a whole. So I thought that those two guys were certainly net negatives and didn't add any value to this Nets squad and tonight's performance.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird seeing Rondé so early because we haven't seen him in this role for so long. And I mean, it was kind of, he didn't have it going. I mean, he had those two blocks. So other than that, he wasn't good. And Trevion Graham, same thing. He missed a couple of threes, I think, in that second quarter and just never got it going. I mean, when he makes the threes, he can certainly hit them at a good rate, but he just didn't have it going tonight. So, I mean, it was smart by Kenny to sub both of them out. One other player that I want to touch on, Krug's got 0 minutes. What did you guys think about that?
I thought that there were moments where we could have used his energy. I probably would have, you know, maybe subbed him in instead of a Trevion at certain times. But I think, you know, if you're looking at it overall, well, you know, you sort of judge on the fact that Rodent hasn't been good at all in this entire series. So we look at, you know, things in the glass half full and a more optimistic sort of situation and go, well, if Rodent was here, we would have had an extra couple of points. We would have got some steals. We would have got some defense. He would have got in Ben Simmons' head. But at the same time, he could have been even worse than Trevion in that sort of sense. With Trevion, you know what you're going to get in that sort of aspect. It's not great, but I think Rodions can do some damage negatively as well. So I thought I would have liked to see him. And I think that he could have added something. But at the same time, I could have easily seen him being a net negative as he has been for most of this series.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded if he threw him out there for a couple minutes in the second half after, you know, Damari hasn't been great, Trevion hasn't been great, and Rondé wasn't great. If you wanted to give some extra minutes to Rodions, I think that's fine. I do find it interesting that you elect to start him in game 3 and then not play him any minutes in game 4. I just think that game 3, Kenny wasn't quick enough to make the adjustment to the starting lineup. And I'll keep harping on that because I think it really impacted them in game 3, which was probably a more winnable game with Embiid being out.
I agree with that. I think that we've talked about proactivity instead of reactivity. I think the coach Kenny's done that a couple of times in this series. Brett Brown has done it as well. The coaching battle, as we've sort of spoken about at length, has been integral. But at the end of the day, coaching has an impact, but it's the players out there executing and making the right plays and hitting the shots and playing the right defense and, you know, making the right rotations that get you the wins and losses. Coaching can only get you so far. But I think that if there were some minor tweaks, we might have won tonight. But I think it was more on the players executing than it was on Coach Kenny's coaching, at least in tonight's game.
Yeah, and eventually it's just going to come down to talent wins in the playoffs, whether you like it or not. And Philadelphia has five All-Star caliber players on the other side starting for them. So,
I would say four. I wouldn't say JJ Redick's an All-Star, right, but JJ's a good shooter. I just feel like it definitely talent, but I think there's still some areas where the Nets like instead of just like focusing on one complete plan on every single possession or whatever it may be, like if something's working, keep going to it. Like, yo, there was a play they were running and they were getting JJ Redick in the switch. And then when he wouldn't want to switch, the guard could get downhill, keep going back to that play. If they're going to keep JJ Redick on the floor, you need to keep attacking him. Like, it's not the most fun type of basketball to watch, but Houston does it and they win basketball games because they expose mismatches on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think that there's some stuff happening around Twitter in terms of the fact that Caris LeVert is becoming one of the best isolation players, budding isolation players going around. If that, I mean, it doesn't necessarily fit Coach Kenny's system in that sort of sense, but I think that you go to what's working. And for the most part, if not all of the offense, it was working. And you're putting the ball in Caris LeVert's hand. He was finishing over Joel Embiid quite consistently. He was finishing through him. And it was just, there wasn't enough times where I think that we went to Caris LeVert. I think that it will rue the day in that sort of sense. But there's a lot of missed opportunities in this game. But the Sixers got the win, and you got to give them the credit where credit's due.
Yeah, and then there's that nice dunk that LeVert had in the first quarter over Joel Embiid. But then there were also times where he was just exploiting the matchup against JJ Redick, and he was just blowing right by him. And that's really where Caris LeVert was able to take advantage of.
Yeah, and I think that's just like an area where the Nets kind of have been sleeping. It's like, yeah, it's not fun. It's not the offense you run. But sometimes when you're in a situation where you're out-talented in terms of the Sixers, you just need to go at their weakest spot, especially if they have so many spots they can attack you on the other end. You know, they look at it and they're like, all right, we have, you know, 2 to 3 mismatches every single possession.
Yeah, there was a lot of times. And Mike Scott was saying, you know, on defending Spencer Dinwiddie, I have to be physical. I know he has a speed on me, so I have to try and, you know, beat him up a little bit. And there were some times where I thought he got a little bit too physical and Spencer didn't get the calls. But I think it worked both ways. And, you know, I'd rather have Spencer Dinwiddie than Mike Scott, the owner of Scranton Branch, the manager of Scranton Branch in Scranton, Pennsylvania. But at the end of the day, he made that clutch play. And he has been a good role player. And I think will be a good role player. And, you know, I think that he's probably the Sixers' best guy off the bench. I think James Ennis, he'll be having some nightmares about guarding Caris LeVert, that's for sure.
Mike Scott definitely provides him something, and he's a good role player because he doesn't mind not touching the ball, because you can watch the game and for like 3 minutes, he won't even touch the basketball.
Yeah, and besides... Yeah. Oh, sorry, Jack.
No, I was just going to say that I agree with what Nick's saying. Sorry for interrupting there, Will.
No, I was going to say, yeah, Mike Scott's been one of their best players, but I mean, he didn't have a good game, but this series, Boban has really just been destroying us inside, and he's definitely like one of the main reasons, especially with Embiid being hurt, that Philadelphia is able to, you know, pull away with these games.
Yeah, and I think the fact is the Nets don't have Ed Davis. They don't even have a third center, which we've talked about a lot. It just really hurts them in the series. There's just, you know, going into it, there was a lot of areas that the Nets could have been exploited. And the Sixers have done a good job after game one and kind of getting woken up by the Nets to play a little bit harder and do things a little bit better.
Yeah, and I mean, this could be a budding rivalry if the Nets get some sort of established free agent, be it a Jimmy Butler, be it a Tobias Harris, be it a Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. I think the Nets are in a really good spot going forward. And I think that the Sixers offseason, they've sort of gone all in. And I've read and listened to some minor rumblings going around that there might be a reason behind it, and the fact that they're not necessarily confident in Joel Embiid's health long term. So they want to go all in for these next few years because they don't know how much longer Joel Embiid can play at a high level. Now, obviously, that's probably speaking way too soon and going over the top, but it certainly could be a possibility. And whereas the Nets are building towards something and sort of taking those right steps and doing the right moves, but this is one step in the process, and you know our progress is more important.
Yeah, and I feel like the Sixers, in terms of like, they've rushed a little bit in terms of their process because of rushing the trade for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris in the same year. That makes sense that they want to get the best window of Embiid, where the Nets are kind of taking things slow. And I think, you know, the Nets technically are still in the rebuild.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like what everybody says on Twitter, basically, like Jack said, progress is our process. And that's just basically what this Nets organization is. So, I mean, like we've said a million times, we're playing with house money. So it's a blessing to be here.
Game 5, what are your thoughts? What are you looking forward to? Adjustments, anything special? Or you just kind of go with the same flow and hope that you can kind of pull out the final plays and get the W?
Yeah, I think that if you're Coach Kenny, you need to just read the game a little bit better. Hopefully, Ed Davis is back. I think you keep playing Jared Allen 30-plus minutes. And you give all of Rondé's minutes to Ed Davis. I think that's probably the major sort of diversion that you have. And if Joe Harris isn't hitting his shots, you know, take him out or keep him out there and add in Spencer Dinwiddie and let him play 30-plus minutes. I think those are the main things. And I think you've just got to hope for one or two of the role players to hit some shots, because at the end of the day, that's probably the difference between winning and losing in some of these matchups. And I think that if Coach Kenny is proactive rather than reactive, then we'll get some wins. But I'm not expecting anything much more. This series has sort of peaked to an extent, but there's still a couple of games more. And, you know, when the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead, maybe Philly will do it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be important that Russell, LeVert, and Dinwiddie play 30-plus minutes. It's going to be important that Allen really steps up if Davis is still hurting. I mean, obviously, I think Jared Dudley is going to play a lot more than 19 minutes on, I think we play Monday. So it's really going to be important that Jared Dudley steps up and really does what he's been doing these last couple games for Brooklyn. And I think with the addition of Ed Davis to the way that we play tonight, Brooklyn could certainly come out on top.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough to be in the situation they're in, down 3-1. It's like, yeah, maybe they can pull out game 5 and then force game 6 and then game 7's in Philly. I think that's your best bet, is trying to extend the series now. Overall, I think, like we've talked about, and the vibe of the entire series was, you know, the Nets are playing with house money, and hopefully they can kind of just have another good showing in game 5.
Yeah, we make it 3-2, make things a little bit scary, make things a little bit uncomfortable for the Sixers. I'm much higher on the Toronto Raptors. So if we can make things a bit more comfortable for the Sixers, make things a little bit easy for some other teams, I'd prefer that. And I think that the experience that we'll get from this being a young team, guys like DeAndre Russell, Caris LeVert, who are going to be on this team long-term, Jared Allen as well, going forward, it'll be invaluable for the experience. And hopefully you'll learn a few things. We've sort of talked about these sort of close losses at points during the season that you hope you can learn from it. You watch the tape, because that final quarter, those final 6 minutes were pretty poor. And if you can learn from them and respond and play 4 good quarters of basketball and make the Sixers sort of play up against you, then it was all worth it to a very minor extent. I mean, the win would have been far greater than that. But at the end of the day, we got the L. We got to deal with it and we'll move on. Life goes on.
Yeah, like Jack said, I mean, he summed it up perfectly. But this is the first playoff experience for the majority of our players. I mean, even Spencer Dinwiddie, he only played a couple minutes in his first time in the playoffs. So, I mean, just this experience of getting here and understanding what it's like going into, hopefully we're going to make the playoffs for the next few years with the way that this team is going. I mean, it's just an amazing experience for these guys to get going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you see a young team go to the playoffs for the first time and really win a playoff series or have a deep run. I think you benefit from the experience. And I would say the Nets have choked a little bit in the series, or certain players just haven't played up to the regular standard. Maybe that's the physicality of the playoffs or just the pressure, but whatever it may be. But guys, that wraps it up as always. Will, Jack, thanks for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and YouTube.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.